This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. If you're like me, you're always on the prowl for the next good book to read. Well, our next guest is here to help. It's hard to find him in his office behind all the mountains of books. Steve Paulson joins us now. He's the executive producer for WPR's To the Best of Our Knowledge. Steve, welcome back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
All right, well, let's dive right into some books. You're going to start us off, I think, with some fiction.
Absolutely. So I brought along three books, and the first one I wanted to talk about is The Bone Clocks by David Mitchell. Now, he's probably best known for an earlier book he wrote, Cloud Atlas, mm-hmm. which was turned into a movie, not a very good one from what I hear.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie. I have the book. I haven't read it. It's on my to-read stack at home.
Right, right. Well, he's an English novelist who's a virtuoso. I mean, he's kind of this amazing writer who manages to sort of write these experimental novels that also become bestsellers. And partly what he does is he tells these interlocking stories. They're typically told by a different narrator, and they each have a different kind of style, and they're really fun to read. I mean, just sort of page turners. And so what he's done in his new novel, The Bone Clocks, is there are some chapters that are very realistic, others are basically pure fantasy. And he starts the story out with it's the story of this rebellious 15-year-old girl, Holly Sykes, who's running away from home, and it turns out that she has certain strange abilities. She has visions and she hears voices. And if you'd like, I could read you a little
passage. Let's hear a bit of that.
Sure. Okay. So she's reflecting back on when she was younger, and she says, I was 7 years old in 1976. It didn't rain all summer, and the gardens turned brown. And I remember queuing with buckets down the end of Queen Street with Brendan and Ma'am for water from standpipes. The drought got that bad. My day mares started that summer. I heard voices in my head. Not mad or drooly or especially scary even, not at first. The radio people, I called them, because at first I thought there was a radio on in the next room, only there never was a radio on in the next room. They were clearest at night, but I heard them at school, too, if everything was quiet enough, in a test, say. Three or four voices would chunter away at once, and I never quite made out what they were saying. Brendan had talked about mental hospitals and men in white coats, so I didn't dare tell anyone. Ma'am was pregnant with Jacko. Dad rushed off his feet at the pub. Sharon was only three, and Brendan was a plonker even then. I knew hearing voices wasn't normal, but they weren't actually harming me, so maybe it was just one of those secrets people live with.
I'm intrigued already. That's The Bone Clocks. You've got another bit of it to read, but yeah. I mean, experimental and bestseller, not often things that happen in the same sentence. So he's doing weird stuff, but in an approachable way, it sounds like.
Absolutely, yeah. And so he's both sort of having a lot of fun. It's really a great fun to read. And also he's dealing with some big ideas. And so one of the plots here is there are these two groups of immortal beings, and there's kind of this cosmic clash between sort of the forces of good and evil. Mm-hmm. And there's a deeper story here, which is he's sort of talking about death and immortality. And David Mitchell's asking a few big questions like, would you want to be immortal if you could be? And if you were immortal, would you start to feel godlike? I mean, would you sort of like throw out all the rules of normal morality because they maybe wouldn't really apply to you? And sort of the larger question he's asking then is, is knowing that you're going to die partly what gives life meaning?
Well, it's a classic question, ancient Greek literature and beyond. We've been there again and again. Do you have another reading from that one?
Yeah, actually not another reading with that. I have a reading from the last book, if you'd like.
Yeah.
Should I talk about another book here?
Well, let's tease that a little bit. Let's hold that off.
Okay.
Let's get to nonfiction.
Fiction. Yeah, so another book that I brought in is it's kind of this amazing synthesis of history. It's by an Israeli historian named Yuval Noah Harari, who wrote a book called Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. It's along the lines of sort of one of those big sweeping histories like Jared Diamond writes, like Guns, Germs, and Steel. And basically he's asking the question, why did our species, Homo sapiens, come to dominate the Earth? Because if you look back in history, it's not at all clear that this would have happened. I mean, they were for 2 million years or so. Our ancestors, they had invented simple stone tools, but they were kind of in the middle of the pack. You know, they were, sometimes they'd eat other animals. Sometimes they would be eaten. And so something happened then, like people estimate maybe 70,000 years ago or so. It's what was called the cognitive revolution. So something sort of happened in the brain, and we seemed to develop language skills, ability to communicate, and things really took off. And again, but it wasn't exactly clear why, because even at this point, I mean, there was this other sort of kind of human being, the Neanderthals, you know, and there was some interbreeding between humans and Neanderthals, but not much. And Neanderthals were actually, they were bigger, they were stronger, they had bigger brains, but Homo sapiens took over. And so the question is why? Harari is speculating that it was basically because our ancestors, Homo sapiens, learned how to live in large groups. I mean, so it wasn't just that, you know, we trusted our immediate family or sort of the other members of the group that we knew personally. And so the question is, why did this happen? And he says it's because our ancestors learned how to tell stories about things that didn't really exist.
Wow. So fiction.
Fiction, yes. Fiction.
Made us the dominant species.
Yes. And so, I mean, we think about that. I mean, so what? How could you bring together a group that's not just, say, 50 members or 100 members, but thousands? You got to tell stories. You got to have a story that unites the people. Maybe you believe in the same gods. Maybe you believe in that you're all sort of part of the same city or the same country, or, you know, in more modern times, maybe you all subscribe to a certain financial system. You all believe that, you know, the dollar, you know, is the common currency. You know, it's like they're all fictions in a way. And so he's saying it's our ability to tell these fictions is what brought us together.
Well, and that's got to involve some kind of brain story in there too, I imagine, because, well, imagine you have to be able to imagine something that isn't there, which isn't a natural for most animals.
Absolutely, yes. And so, it's not just sort of the brain story, but it's that we learn how to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it's kind of our social skills in a way that brought us together. And then he's also speculating about what might happen in the future. And he thinks that, you know, maybe there is actually a limited lifespan for our human species. Or that we will start to kind of become cyborgs, or, you know, sort of some advance in some new technological way.
Wow, that's big history.
It is.
I love that. Okay,
yeah, it's absolutely fascinating.
I've got to read this one. I also love the idea of, I mean, when we look back at how we developed, I think there's always the assumption that, yeah, well, we're, you know, this populist species, we run the show mainly. So, of course, that's naturally how it's going to be.
Right.
Going back and saying, maybe not.
It could have turned out very differently.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, you go back 100,000, 200,000 years ago, and there's no way that you could have predicted that, you know, history would have played out this way.
Oh, fantastic. I got to read this one. Okay, you've got one more. We've done a fiction. We've done some nonfiction. Now you've got a memoir.
Yeah, and I've actually saved the best for last.
Oh, okay.
So this is actually is an amazing book, one of my favorite books that I've read in the last couple of years. It's called H is for Hawk by another British writer, Helen MacDonald. And it's a story about grief and about raptors. And sort of the story goes that Helen MacDonald's father dies unexpectedly. She's devastated, and they were very close. And one of the ways they had bonded with each other was they had a shared fascination with birds of prey. And so she had sort of learned the art of falconry when she was little. And so when her dad dies, she's sort of, you know, she's just at a total loss, and she decides that, well, maybe she should get a hawk. And so she drives up to Scotland to meet a breeder who's raised a 10-week-old goshawk, and he's brought it in a box, and he's starting to open the box. And if you'd like, I could read a little passage.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Sure. So this is how it goes. Concentration, infinite caution, daylight irrigating the box, scratching talons, another thump, and another thump. The air turned syrupy, slow, flecked with dust. The last few seconds before a battle, and with the last bow pulled free, he reached inside, and amidst a whirring, chaotic clatter of wings and feet and talons and a high-pitched twittering, and it's all happening at once, the man pulls an enormous, enormous hawk out of the box, and in a strange coincidence of world and deed, a great flood of sunlight drenches us, and everything is brilliance and fury. The hawk's wings barred and beating, the sharp fingers of her dark-tipped primaries cutting the air, her feathers raised like the scattered quills of a fretful porpentine, two enormous eyes. My heart jumps sideways. She is a conjuring trick, a reptile, a fallen angel, a griffin from the pages of an illuminated bestiary, something bright and distant, like gold falling through water, a broken marionette of wings, legs, and light-splashed feathers.
Wow, well, I've never done any kind of falconry before, but I kind of want to now, just to get that up-close view.
Right.
So how, I mean, you don't have to spoil the ending, but she's dealing with this animal to deal with a very human loss.
Yeah. And so she kind of gets a little crazier as the story goes on. I mean, she's sort of wondering, is she sort of losing it? Is she kind of going insane in a way? But it's kind of the story of where the wild and the domestic meat, because she can never really tame this hawk. Mm. You know, she sort of tries. I mean, she trains it in some way, and the hawk sort of learns more of the ways of coexisting in the human world. But it's this feral creature, and it's big. And she is sort of trying to get her life back together. But it's sort of it's through the hawk that she realizes what it means to care for another being. And the hawk sort of brings her back into the world.
Well, quite a theme you've brought us today, dealing with mortality and immortality, the mortality of the human species itself, and dealing with grief, wilderness, and nature.
You know, I hadn't really thought about that until you just mentioned this.
So now you're doing a course. This is your syllabus, Steve.
I had not even realized that.
Okay, yeah. What's on your, just a few moments left, what's at the top of your to-read next list that you can't tell us about yet because you haven't cracked it yet?
Well, one book, actually, that I'm sort of fascinated by is there's a mountain climber named Ryan Reinhold Messner, who's perhaps the sort of the greatest mountain climber in the world. He's in his 70s now, and he's just written a book about sort of basically his life story. I mean, he's like the first person who climbed Mount Everest solo, the first to go up without oxygen, and
wow.
It's just amazing story.
Well, I'd rather read about it than do it.
Yeah.
Well, that is great. Steve, thank you so much for sharing these with us.
Oh, it's always fun.
That's Steve Paulson. He's the executive producer of WPR's To the Best of Our Knowledge. We've got his list of book recommendations up at the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is off today. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.